New discoveries about the brain are raising the question, can your genes make you kill? Already, neuroscience has been presented as evidence in more than 1,200 cases. It's being called neurolaw, and it played a role in a murder trial in Tennessee last year. That trial is one of the first where jurors heard evidence from neuroscience to help them decide guilt or innocence. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty has this final story in our series on the criminal brain. And a warning to our listeners, this report contains graphic descriptions of violence.
When the police arrived at Bradley Waldrop's trailer home in the mountains of Tennessee, they found a war zone. Assistant District Attorney Drew Robinson says there was blood on the walls, blood on the carpet, blood on the truck outside.
This is the defendant's hands as he's being handcuffed.
They're bloody.
They're just covered in blood.
Waldrop shot his wife's friend, Leslie Bradshaw, 8 times and sliced her head open with a sharp object. Prosecutor Cynthia LaCroix Schimmel says when Waldrop was finished, he chased after his wife, Penny, with a machete, chopping off her finger and cutting her over and over.
There are murders, and then there are just hacking to death, just trails of blood. No, I've not seen one like this, and I've done a lot.
Prosecutors charged Waldrop with the felony murder of Leslie Bradshaw, which carries the death penalty, and attempted first-degree murder of his wife, Penny. It seemed clear to them that Waldrop's actions were intentional and premeditated.
One of them was he told his children to come tell your mama goodbye because he was going to kill her, and he had the gun and he had the machete.
It was a pretty straightforward case. Even Bradley Waldrop said so during his trial last year.
I killed Leslie Bradshaw. I attacked my wife. I'm not proud of none of it.
It wasn't a who done it, it was a why done it.
Defense attorney Wiley Richardson.
And in this particular case, the testimony we knew before we even, you know, well before we got to trial was going to be very graphic. We had to do something to try to, not dismantle, but to give a broader and fuller picture of what that was.
How to do that? The answer, it turned out, lay in Bradley Waldrop's genes. Richardson went to forensic psychiatrist William Burnett of Vanderbilt University and asked him to give Waldrop a psychiatric evaluation. Burnett also took a blood sample and brought it to Vanderbilt's molecular genetics laboratory. Since 2004, Burnett and lab director Cincy Venenchek-Jones have been analyzing the DNA of people like Bradley Waldrop.
We've tested about 30 criminal defendants since then, most of whom were charged with murder.
They were looking for a particular variant of the MAOA gene, also known as the warrior gene, because it has been associated with violence. Burnett says they found that Waldrop has the high-risk version of the gene.
His genetic makeup, combined with his history of child abuse, created a vulnerability that he would be a violent adult.
Over the fierce opposition of prosecutors, the judge allowed Burnett to testify in court that these two factors help explain why Waldrop snapped that murderous night.
We didn't say that these things made him become violent, but they certainly constituted a risk factor or a vulnerability.
Burnett cited scientific studies over the past decade that have found that the combination of genes and child abuse increases one's chances of being convicted of a violent offense by more than 400%. Other studies have not found such a connection, but Burnett thought the jury should know about the gene.
A person doesn't choose to have this particular gene or this particular genetic makeup. A person doesn't choose to be abused as a child. So I think that should be taken into consideration when we're talking about criminal responsibility.
The genetic testing was only one piece of Waldrop's defense. His attorneys also argued that he was depressed, suffered from intermittent explosive disorder, and acted in the heat of passion. Still, defense attorney Sherry Taylor Young says the genetic evidence was critical.
I think that if that wasn't out there, then the jury, all they would have seen were these horrible pictures where he took a machete and hacked at his wife. And all they would think is, yes, he's the worst of the worst, and that's what the death penalty is for, the worst of the worst. But because they heard all the mental issues, they heard all that evidence, they understood what was going on in him and understood why he did what he did.
I would characterize it as smoke and mirrors.
That's Prosecutor Drew Robinson. He says the genetic evidence was just there to confuse the jury. So he called in his own expert, psychiatrist Terry Holmes of the Moccasin Bend Mental Health Institute in Chattanooga. Holmes urged the jury to ignore it.
This was somebody who was intoxicated and mad and was going to hurt somebody, and it had as little or nothing to do with his genetic makeup.
Holmes says it's way too early to use this research in a court of law, and he believes Burnett is spinning the data. But jurors say they weren't spun. Sherry Lard, one of the 12, says it was just one piece of evidence that weighed heavily for some and for others not at all. But, she says, it did figure into a major decision, whether to find Waldrop guilty of murder and impose the death penalty. They concluded that his actions were not premeditated and agreed with the defense argument that Waldrop just exploded.
I remember when we were talking as a jury, the comment was brought up, you know, if I were in this situation, I would snap. But there was more to it. There was more to his whole life that led to that moment.
Including his genes?
Oh, I'm sure. And his background, you know, nature versus nurture.
Another juror, Debbie Beatty, says the science helped persuade her that Waldrop was not entirely in control of his actions.
A diagnosis is a diagnosis. You know, it's there. A bad gene is a bad gene.
After 11 hours of deliberation, the jury convicted Waldrop of voluntary manslaughter in the death of Leslie Bradshaw and attempted second-degree murder of his wife. Prosecutor Drew Robinson was stunned.
I was just flabbergasted. I did not know how to react to it.
Nor did fellow prosecutor Cynthia LaCroix Schimmel. She worries that this sort of defense is a wave of the future.
Anything that defense attorneys can have to latch onto to try to save their client's lives or to try to lessen their culpability, they will do.
Waldrop's attorney, Wiley Richardson, says she's right.
Yes, I would use it again.
Because it's a pretty potent weapon.
Well, it seemed to work in this case.
Bradley Waldrop was sentenced to 32 years in prison. At the hearing, Judge Carol Ross told Waldrop that he should think twice about appealing. The state might not mind trying this again and asking for the death penalty, the judge said. You might not be as fortunate with a jury the next time. Scientists and legal experts expect to see more cases like this as neuroscience makes inroads into the courtroom and presents guilt and innocence not in terms of black and white, but in shades of gray. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
Explore the other stories in our Criminal Brain series at our website, npr.org.